question. What is your name, sir?
Gilbert Dumbahini.
Okay, well, at this time, the Honorable Mr. Neal, Mr. David Neal, he will serve as the lead for the hearing, so the hearing will begin very shortly, sir. So please just hold on, sir.
Okay.
Good morning, sir. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
All right. This could be a parole hearing with the Honorable Board of Detention Clemency this morning, and it's for parole connection, second sentence, or absolute discharge. And would you state your full name and ABC number for the record, please?
My name is Gilbert Andrew Dumbahini, number 60451.
Thank you, sir. Dumbahini? Is that anything else?
Yes, Dumbahini.
Okay. I'll try not to butcher it too bad. So,
it's a good name.
First of all, let me introduce the board members going to conduct your hearing today. To my very far right, you have the Honorable Michael Johnson. To his left, the Honorable Gil Rittenhouse. In the center of the dais is the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, who's our board chairman. My name is David Neal, and I'll be the hearing lead this morning. So what I'm going to do is I'll go over some information and verify with you as we go, and then you'll have an opportunity to talk to the board and then we'll throw some questions back and forth. And all right, okay?
Okay.
All right, so let's see. You're 54 years old now, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You served a life sentence for aggravated assault when you began October 7th, 1981. You also have another life sentence, which is for narcotic drug violation, which is consecutive to the aggravated assault. And then there's also a 5-year and 9-month sentence for drug paraphernalia that will run concurrent to the narcotic drug sentence. All sentences were classified dangerous and repetitive, and the offenses were committed while Mr. Dumbahini was on release. You appeared before this board one time in reference to the Hampton offenses, and that hearing was for phase one commutation, and you were not passed to phase two. And you actually become parole eligible for this on October 26, 2018. So no matter what the board does today, nothing will occur with your sentences before October 26, 2018. You're certified for this hearing on July 24, 2018. Does that sound pretty correct to that point, sir?
Yeah.
Okay. It's some of these sentencing structures are a little hard to understand. All right, so...
The one that was in 2005, the one you spoke about, was a clemency hearing because of the... I think it was life sentence or something that was going on in the news, and they wanted to review everybody's cases, and I had no idea what was going on, but that's when I went in 2005, I believe.
Yeah, that's what the computation phase one and phase two are.
I guess you got murdered a bunch of people up, but not me.
Yeah, I think it's a process. People ask for a reduction in their sentence, some kind of clemency, and it's not in the order of normal parole and stuff like that. And that's what that means.
Okay.
Now, normally I go over the offense right at this point in time, but because of the way the packet is written and everything, I felt it easier to go over criminal history first. There's no specific criminal history list in your packet, but the Ames Brown list prior Arizona convictions with DOC incarceration. So I'm aware of that because it leads partly into an innocent offense anyway. It shows that November 4, 1986, he was sentenced to 6 months incarceration with 2 years probation for felony DUI. Then on November 6, 1987, just about a year later, a petition to revoke the probation was filed. And on December 7, 1987, probation was revoked and he was sentenced to 2 years for the probation violation. And then you were released on March 6, 1989. On January 9, 1990, you were sentenced to 1.875 years for endangerment. And you were released on parole on November 23, 1990. And then on that sentence expired on November 21, 1991. However, on November 30th, 1990, while on parole, you were at a nightclub and one of the dancers complained that you wouldn't pay for a table dance or something to that effect. The bouncer and the manager asked you to leave. You became belligerent during the argument. You displayed a handgun and pointed it at the victim. Police were called and you were subsequently found at another bar and arrested for aggravated assault, which is the infant offense. You were released on bond on May 9, 1991 and failed to appear for your trial on June 13, 1991. You were tried in absentia and found guilty on June 15, 1991. You were arrested on narcotic charges and you were allowed to bond out even though you had the other stuff going on. You left the state and subsequently your bond was revoked and you were incarcerated on March 16, 1992. But you had a jury trial convicted you at that time. Okay, does that all sound fairly accurate?
Yeah.
It's a little, the way it's in the packet, it's a little hard to, it's just say, oh yeah, criminal history started here and over there. So, now that we've got that done, I'm going to go on with a little bit more information about you. You seem to have moderate discipline while you've been incarcerated. Only 2 violations in the last 5 years. One was in 2013 for a UA violation, whether it says you were guilty and it was a major, it doesn't say whether it was because you refused to drop or because you were dirty. But then on just about a year later, you had an informal resolution, but it was for disrupting the tent. So that's pretty commendable, sir. That's, you've been incarcerated a long time, and it's not showing, you made some mistakes, but have been doing really well in the last 5 years. So you have some programming that includes anger management, and I guess you're working on your GED.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah, I think there was 3 or 4 sections shown there, but it indicated that you were participating in the GED program. So that's very commendable too. That's an important thing that a lot of people don't understand, even people that don't get in trouble with the law, they don't understand how important at least a high school education is. So.
I'm finding I don't know a lot about education. I never went to high school, so it's all new to me.
Well, there's a lot of things that if you'd have gone to high school and taught back then, you wouldn't remember them now. And if you took the GED courses, you'd find out you still don't know a lot of things because back when you're 16, 17, 18 years old, most people don't pay a lot of attention to that. So, but it's commendable your program and everything. It's not the least time it was understandable because this is just an acronym, second sentence. I'm not finding any more family or community support. Do you have any family in the state, sir?
I did. Everybody's dying already, so not much now.
Do you have any relatives in other states or anything?
Not really.
Okay. And also, I don't find any letters from victims or the county attorney, which is...
Well, that's great.
But, okay, sir. So, can you tell us a little bit about what was going on in your life back in the day when all these one on top of the other crimes were going on?
When I was just being real mischievous, I was didn't have any goals in life then, so I just went by whim everything that I did.
Well, you didn't during that time period I was talking about your all those crimes, you didn't have a whole lot of time outside of the prison system there for a few years.
Well, actually, I haven't. I've been in prison in and out since I was a juvenile.
Yeah, well, I mean, you had a couple of releases there, but you weren't out very long. You know, what about you finished your sentence and it was 2 or 3 years later when you got in trouble with them? It was pretty much right on top of each other, and then at the end there, you were on probation and still doing the stuff. That's one of the reasons you got such long sentences on that, is because of all that previous convictions, and you were on release when this happened, and, you know, just, and the fact you happened with the assault occurred with the display of a handgun and those kind of things, so. But yeah, that's a, so basically you've grown up in prison. So, how have you changed since then?
I'm more relaxed now. I'm older now, 54 now, and I don't have all these overzealous expectations of life.
So, what is your plan when you finish these sentences? Because there is hope that you can get out, you know, the life sentence is not natural life, it's, you know, 25 years, and the other ones are consecutive to, concurrent to, whatever. But anyway, there is hope that you can, you know, return to society. What is your plan, if and when you do have return to society?
Well, I painted cars before I came to prison, and if I ever get out, I would probably go back to painting cars, because that's what I know how to do well. But looking at the calendar, I won't be out until I'm 78, and right now I don't even have much into my retirement account, so I'm not too sure what I'll do when I get out. I only have 10 years in, so I can't even get a Social Security, so it's kind of dire. I mean, I don't know what to do.
Well, but there's if we move you forward to your next consecutive sentence, then I guess that's another life sentence. But there's hope, and even at 74, if you get out, there's still life expectancy in this country that keeps, you know, getting longer and longer as time goes by. So even at 74, I understand that it probably wouldn't happen to go back to work real quickly painting cars or anything like that, but there's a lot of other things that somebody of that age can do, and if you're not going to get Social Security, you're going to need to have some kind of a way to support you. And have you made any contact with any of these groups that are out there that work with inmates? candidates to get ready to go back into society and to succeed when they get out?
No, I haven't.
It's, I mean, this is just a suggestion, and it's not, you know, anything required of you, but it would be, it could be very helpful to you if you could reach out, find one of those groups, because they do this a lot of yards and stuff like that, but they can help you run around and put, so that you can prepare for the time you do get out, and if you're 74 and you're out, they'll still help you, help you find employment and housing and everything else, and run around, it can be a big boost to your morale and everything, getting involved in some of those groups like that.
Yeah, well, I'm a native, and my family really has property on the reservation, so that's I'll have somewhere to go as far as the houses. In fact, we're doing a thing right now. I'm supposed to be getting 2 lots of property out of Hopi, so I'll have that also. They're 20-acre lots, 2 of them.
Well, that's so. Yeah, well, it's good to hear that you're in contact with your tribe. There's a lot of support available for tribal members. It's very, you know, it's a very good program and everything, and it's there for you. All you have to do is make up your mind to, you know, to use it. So I'm gonna see if my fellow board members have any questions at this time. Ms. Rittenhouse.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Neal. So would you, where would you think you would live if you were released? Would you go to that property and try to live somewhere like that, or?
Well, I got 25 more years to go, so it'll be when I'm 78, and but that property will still always be there. We have a T.O. blood also, along with the Hopi blood, and on the T.O. res, there is a family lot out there, and that house will always be there.
Okay, so there's even a house that you could live in on the reservation.
Okay. It's right across from the San Javier Church.
Oh, yeah.
San Javier Reservation.
I know exactly where that is. Okay, so, and do you have any children?
Yes, I do. I have three separate relationships since I've been in and out of prison. But no actual contact.
Okay, but you haven't stayed in contact with them at all?
I did for a while, but I just keep reminding them that I have so much time, 50 years, there's nothing I could possibly offer them. So I kind of just backed off on the relationship. I don't want to be a burden to anybody. I can support myself in here by having a prison job, so I'm fine.
Okay, understood, sir. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Nan.
So I have a couple of questions, and my first one is that can you explain to me when you make the statement about overzealous expectations of life?
Well, I had big dreams and big hopes of having lots of money and lots of cars and lots of things that were just, I don't even think that way anymore.
So how are you thinking now?
A lot more practical.
Okay.
Even like my comment about Social Security, you know, those kind of things come into my mind now. You know, what am I going to do now that I don't even have 10 years in, so I'm not even eligible to get Social Security. So those kind of things are in my mind now that I haven't even considered those before.
Okay. So the current offense that you're actually in custody on now, you were out of prison just 1 week before this incident happened, and you were in prison for shooting somebody in the leg. Is that right?
Oh, yes.
So, go ahead.
Oh, when I was at that club bar, came up to me and told me I owed $5 for a guy that she was dancing for next to me. I had no idea who this guy was. and she was trying to tell me I had to pay $25 for this guy's dance. I don't even know what's going on. That's where the argument ensued.
Yes, sir.
I'm not going to be robbed. I'm not going to be robbed of $5 by somebody that I don't even know what the whole situation was. Obviously, somebody else was sitting at that table when I sat down, or I have no idea what happened. But I'm not going to be taken for $5.
So, sir, you're not going to be taken for $5, but you prefer to do 25 years of your life in prison.
That was a consequence of my not being able to allow myself to be somebody to take $5 from me.
Okay, so my question to you, sir, is that you were out of prison for 1 week when this incident occurred.
Yeah.
You were in prison for shooting someone in the leg. Why would you be out? Why would you be out 1 week and have a gun?
I can't answer that question.
Okay. So what I'm trying to understand is that you were in prison, you were released, and then you got out of prison, and within a week you wind up with a gun, and a gun is what sent you to prison for shooting someone in the leg. And so what is it, you know, how am I to understand that when you get out of prison, or if you were paroled to your next consecutive sentence and eventually got out, that you still wouldn't exhibit that type of behavior, sir, is what I'm trying to really understand about your current situation.
Well, obviously the right thing would not be having a gun, but at that time I was younger then, and I thought myself pretty responsible with a gun. Even the previous case where I shot the guy in the leg, it was out of self-defense. He was throwing bottles at me, so I had the sense of mind in order to shoot him in the leg and not just shoot him in the chest. And then in the second instance, at the bar, I didn't shoot anybody. I just let him know that, well, these bouncers are coming up to me, either going to jump me or whatever. I showed him the gun. I got a gun. You guys aren't going to hurt me. And I walked away and left. I didn't go beyond what force I needed to.
I understand. But
do you understand?
Yes, sir, I do understand that you, but had you not had that gun in your possession, then that wouldn't have been, you know, you wouldn't be in prison now. I'm trying to understand why. Why would you? Yeah, what?
I understand that. I understand that the gun is the cause of all this.
So, how many programs of like anger management or a long in prison have you taken since you've been incarcerated, sir?
I've only taken the one, I believe. It's pretty extensive also. It's pretty long. Mm-hmm.
So, do you think, sir, that you've gotten your anger under control? I'm not sure what happened in the incident where you shot someone in the leg, but do you think that you've gotten, you know, your anger under control?
I'm a different person today than I am then.
So are you still enrolled in the GED program?
Yes, I am. In fact, I kind of like being in there. I just kind of like going over everything and learning every single little thing. So I'm observing all of that.
Is there a reason why you haven't taken much programming since you've been incarcerated, sir?
In here, when you have your GED or you haven't gotten your GED, they don't give you other programs. The GED is like a priority, and until you finish your GED, then they start giving you other things to do. Because your GED is number one priority.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Right. Just one quick question. So you mentioned the fact that you're part of two nations, tribes. Do you work with them at all, with the leadership and either one of them? I know you said you're going to get the house and the land, the portion of the land, 20 acres or whatever it is. But while you're incarcerated, do they come and assist you or try to help you to get on the right track out in the real world? Does anything like that happen?
No, not really. They don't have anybody like that that comes out and sees you or anything.
Do you have any members of your nations who are incarcerated with you at this time? And I don't mean in terms of gangs, but in terms of who could be helpful to each other, or y'all could help each other, sir. Does anything like that exist?
Yeah, I'm sure there are people here, but I don't really communicate with them because I don't know them well enough, you know. In fact, the endangerment charge was against the person who I admitted to prison, so I stay away from people from prison.
I can appreciate that, sir, because you don't want to get into trouble, but,
yeah.
Yes, sir.
Even communicating with them in here can get you into, mixed up into their problems that have become my problems, and, you know, it's just a downward spiral, so I stick to myself.
Okay. Thank you so much, and good luck, sir, and thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Okay. We're in the hearing, sir. We'll be going into discussion in a few minutes to make a determination. But before that, we would like to give you an opportunity to make a final statement to the board. Tell us anything else you think we might be able to use to make a good decision. We just ask that you don't repeat the information we've already covered, and that's a time management issue, okay?
Okay. I really don't have anything to say, really. So.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, sir.
Okay.
The board will be having the discussion. We'll be talking amongst ourselves. You may think we're addressing you, but we won't be. We'll be discussing your case. But stay on the phone. And when we make a decision, I'll be back with you, okay?
Okay.
All right, the board is now in discussion. Well, this is truly an unfortunate situation. It's kind of sensitive. We don't have a lot of hope at the moment, but since this is not a release to the community, I mean, I'm not as hesitant to look at it, but with the release history that Mr. Gilmore has, I'd be very hesitant to do any kind of arrest or control outside the prison zones. But with the consecutive licenses, and the idea that the majority of the aggravation on this is not from injury causing to anybody or death, it's attitude and prior histories on the knees, he's got a gun, he's displaying it, those kind of things. But I can see where he could be sitting at a point where he really doesn't have any hope for any kind of future release, and I think that is kind of an important thing if you're really trying to rehabilitate somebody, is to always have them have the hope out there in front of them. And like concerning sentence and life sentence, so it is 25 years before we dealt with 12. Based on everything I have here, I will be willing to do a full for the next consecutive sentence. He's not being released, and there's still 25 years to the next parole eligibility, but he will have some hope in his life. So anyway, that's what I'd like to discuss the discussion and see what my fellow board members might have to say about the situation. Mr. Johnson?
I understand what you're saying. I would tell you, this one I'm probably in the middle on, and I just have a great concern that he was in prison for shooting someone in the leg, did a week, he was out and he was in possession of another gun. Although in that incident, in the possession of the other gun, he didn't shoot it, but he did display it and point it, and, you know, while he was at a bar, and trying to understand why he came in, why he would still be in possession of a gun. He just really didn't give me a good, reasonable reason, you know, why he would be with the gun, and knowing that he's a prohibited possessor after he's done time in prison for shooting somebody in the leg. Although I do understand he's 50-something years old now, and he has another life sentence to go to. So it'd be 20, I mean, he has another life sentence, yeah, with a concurrent sentence that's going to run with it, but that's where my concern is, his mental state of mind to get out of prison eventually and what he's going to wind up doing at that time.
Thank you, Mr. Newell. I agree with Mr. Johnson. I'd like to see, and I understand he's working on his GED, which I think is very good. That's very good, and that's very important to do. And he sounds like a very smart man. He has a very, he uses vocabulary and is articulate. I think he states what he means very carefully. And I do know that in some cases it's difficult for people to get into programming if they don't have their GED, because the department often uses that as an inducement to get some people to program that normally may not be willing. I would like to see him take more programming about just his thinking and his decision making, because, you know, as Mr. Johnson said, the notion that you'd be carrying a gun after you just got out of prison for committing a crime by shooting someone, I just can't see the logic of that. And if he was able to complete some of the cognitive restructuring classes and decision-making classes that are available, that would help him with a better thought process. So I would not be in favor, but pull at this time. But as you say, I also don't want to just crush any hope, because I think what he's doing now is very positive, and I want him to hear that. I think it is very positive that he's working on his education. So thank you, Mr. Neal.
Thank you, Mr. Neal.
Well,
I think that he's very sad situation. He does not, at the moment, he does not see a future, or you see that future when he's mid-70s somewhere. But I would hope that at some point he could see that future. But I think the main thing that he should just concentrate on getting that GED and see what life will bring him after then, because there may be some opportunities once he has obtained that GED. Therefore, I don't see moving into his next consecutive sentence until he gets that GED, that he will have shown that he's willing to move forward. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Okay, well, with everything in the discussion, the way it is, I am going to make a motion. And because of the way I think the vote is going to go, I'm going to make the motion to deny Mr. Dulaney a lower or for the next consecutive sentence. I don't have to make charge at this time, and I'll give the reasons after we go.
Second.
Agree.
Motion by myself, second by Ms. Rittenhouse?
No, second by Mr. Johnson.
Okay, sir, the court is asked to deny you the next consecutive sentence or after discharge at this time. We'll be having a discussion, and it will be it will be a allow movement to, we're coming GED, concentrate on it, and there was some very cheap work dollars right in for programming and everything, and just act trade, you're doing real well, keep doing what you're doing, moving forward, don't yourself move backwards. And so this will conclude the hearing. Oh, and one thing I forgot, you know, when you're set off in 6 months.
Different reasons.
Well, the reasons, but right there.
I don't know, I could do 6 months.
6 months?
6 months.
Okay. Okay, so I'm not going to request a 1 year set off, it'll be approximately 6 months, and it'll be certified to return. In front of the board, we'll see how things will progress. I'll fill out the list, the reasons for the denial, and it was a serious and violent offense that hasn't been reported or anything. There were really multiple victims, showing them the victim harassment by the previous probation parole. The prior criminal history. And the list, when I'm a programming, but it's not that you haven't done any, it's just that you hopefully will be able to look quite a bit more once you get that GED set up there. And
yeah, they'll start assigning you stuff to do, it's just the GED just stops everything.
Right. But you know, that's what I recommend it. And those will be the reasons, so this will be your hearing. And we wish you best luck, and it'll be approximately 6 months, and we'll see you again, and hopefully at that time, there'll be some more improvement, and we might be able to move you to the next stage.
So I don't have to do anything, you guys will just contact me when the next hearing is?
Yes, sir. The Department of Corrections, with their system, it pops up that you're out of the, so they're making notifications of us being scheduled with notifying you and all that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I have to request. All right, thank you, sir. And this will be your hearing, and please put the seal three back on the phone.
Okay.